Anybody listen to Limbaugh today? Man, he is ripping on Obama. He called him Barry today. Did you pick up on that? Barry Sotel. Well, that's his maybe his birth name. Barry Sotero or something like that. That's the name that he used to get a college loan. And he says that whenever he walks in the room, he's the most inexperienced person in the room. Man, he is just tearing into this guy. It's a blessing. I get a chuckle out of him. Okay, Psalm 119 up to, let's see, 145. I do think so, yep. Okie dokie, let's go ahead and pray. Lord, I thank you for this book, and Lord, I do ask that you'd help us as we approach this book, that we are diligent students and passionate about what this book says, and I just pray you'd help us to be faithful to your words and honor them. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, remember Psalm 119, the largest psalm. On the average, every verse deals with the Bible itself, different names or titles or references given to the Bible. You've got judgments, you've got commandments, testimonies, statutes, precepts, the way of God, things like that. Verse 145, in this section, you can see the first three verses mention the word cried. And so this would kind of go back to verse 136, where he says in 136, rivers of waters run down mine eyes because they keep not thy law. So he's displaying his innermost passion and desire, first and foremost, to know God personally, and then to try to please him. And that's an internal thing. Some people, you could tell their emotions because they're more... shows them outwardly. Some folks are more reserved, where you can't really tell their emotions. Some folks, when they get upset, you know, they talk and yell and scream. Other folks, when they get upset, they shut up and don't say anything. Just depends on person's personality. I thought it was rather interesting. In Vietnam, I discovered in that culture that they don't raise their voices when they get angry. You know, here the volume turns up, you know, the neck muscles tighten up. But in Vietnam culture, what they do is they use stronger words, but they don't raise their voices. And I was, one time we went to a motel, and the motel guy was going to charge Brent and I the tourist rates, and then Duk and Mike and all the other guys the Vietnam rates, and there was a pretty big gap in there. And because Pastor Wei had made the arrangement, he was expecting to get the Vietnam rates for everybody, and they wouldn't do it. And so we just left. But boy, when he left, he stood there and chewed this guy out. And I'm listening, of course, didn't understand the language, but the volume didn't raise. He just talked to the guy, and Mike is sitting there going like this, oh man, he's ripping into this guy. He's ripping into him. And then he explained to me that culture, they don't raise their voice, they just use stronger words. And then Mike is just, of course, laughing about it, you know, and Pastor Wade was just really tearing this guy apart, and we left, and he said, "Well, you never see us again, pal," or something like that. And that's how they do it. Okay, but a person's drive, you see some athletes where some people... say, you know, they think that you've got to be a really emotional athlete in order to get the job done. Tell that to Tony Dungy when he coached. He wasn't a fireball. You know, he was pretty even-keeled. But you know that inside he had a drive. He had a purpose that he wanted to get something across, and he would do it. But he would get it across not by yelling and screaming. Okay, and It's just everybody's got their own personality in these things. Now, verse 145, notice what this person says. He says, I cried with my whole heart. Hear me, O Lord, I will keep thy statutes. I cried unto thee, save me, and I shall keep thy testimonies. I prevented the dawning of the morning and cried, I hoped in thy word. Three times in a row. Now that crying is not, you know, boo-hooing crying. That crying is an urgent yelling or a verbal statement trying to get God's attention, like he's deaf or something. Okay, I cried with my whole heart, hear me. It's a verbal thing. Esther chapter 4, verse 1, I have several footnotes or several comments there about the idea of crying out to God. The idea of crying out to God is like Peter when he was sinking in water. Lord, save me. That's a crying out to God. Okay, and in Esther chapter 4, verse 1, when Esther was going to go in and see the king, and she was obviously nervous about the situation, so it says that they cried unto the Lord. Now, you'll find this idea of crying unto the Lord through many places in the Psalms. But the idea here is that God is looking down into our hearts and seeing and looking at our drive, at our desire. And if we have a desire to really know God, then he is going to make himself known to that person. Okay, so he's crying out, verse 145. 46, cried unto thee. Now in that verse, I cried unto thee, and then he says, save me. Now this is similar to Romans 10:13. Whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. Call upon. The calling is an urgent calling upon God. Most soul winning, you know, methods that people are teaching these things, you know, get this person to pray this prayer, and you know, there's really no emotion, no desire to know God. Repeat this prayer. That's not a calling out to God. Calling unto the Lord is an idea of somebody drowning in a lake, calling out for help. Okay, and so that Romans 10:13 is, it's an urgency. Again, it doesn't mean that a person has to be crying. Okay, it doesn't mean that at all. When I was in high school varsity basketball, you know, senior year, there, you know, before a game, people get all fired up, yell, scream, yell, la, 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 you know, and I get tired of that stuff. And two of us on our team, during the warm-ups, you know, you got the band playing and the cheerleaders yelling and everybody trying to get excitement going. And you look at him and me during the warm-ups, we'd be yawning. You know, that was my form of nervousness before a game, is to yawn. I could sleep like a baby before, but wide awake afterwards. Okay, but I didn't get into the hoopla, but yet he and I were the, at that time, the main two players in the team. It's just that we kept our drive internal, okay? And often you'll notice that somebody that wears their emotions on their sleeve in a game, those people will panic at the end, okay? And the thing is just relax. Who cares if you win or lose anyway, okay? Practice the thing out. If you get it in, fine. If you don't, tough apples. We're not getting paid for this stuff. Okay, and just relax. I mean, at Hiles Anderson, they had intramural basketball there. They didn't play intercollegiate. And the first year I played, I think I won two games in the last second. You know, one was the last second shot. Another was last, you know, 2 second free throw. And so they coined me the phrase, the Iceman. You know, cool under ice and all that stuff. And it was kind of named after a skinny guy in the pros named George Gervin. And the guy was, you know, the guy was a pretty good ball player. But the idea where is they felt that 5 seconds, 10 seconds, okay, he's not going to throw up a crazy shot. The other night, at the end of one of the games, there's 10 seconds left. And one got the ball right in the center. And when you're half court, 10 seconds, man, you got a lot of time. two guys were open on the wings, and they didn't get the ball, and a shot was shot like a 30-foot shot, and you know it was way off. And then the other team gets the ball with 5 seconds left, just held the ball. You see, that's panicking. Okay, and so you watch like some of these real good quarterbacks, 2 minutes left in a game, that's a lot of time for these guys. And the reason why is that they're not panicking, they're more focused. Okay, and it's a mental thing. And the same goes with the Bible. It's not that we are emotional, you know, wrecks, it's just that we concentrate more on God. Okay, and want to know Him and Him personally. Okay, so he says, I cried unto thee, save me, I shall keep thy testimonies. I shall keep thy testimony. That is an urgent desire. It is a determined desire. Come hell or high water, I'm going to keep thy testimonies. Now in verse 140, I prevented the dawning of the morning. Pre-event. Pre-event. He's up before the dawning of the morning. And this is when he's under a great burden to know God. And then he says, I hoped in thy word. Not only in this case is he up early in the morning, at another time, verse 148, mine eyes prevent the night watches. He's staying up at night. Now this is a getting up and a staying up, not out of self-discipline. Okay, it's a burden to stay up where he can't sleep, focusing on the Lord. Where even if he does go to sleep, he probably sit up and pray in bed, and he's still sleeping because he's meditating on the Word of God. Okay, and so mine eyes prevent the night watches that I might meditate in thy word. Okay, now this is the one, it's the man after God's own heart. You know, of course, if David's a writer of it, and it's not given who the human writer is, the man writer. But this is a great burden to know God. Now the Mormons call this a burning in one's bosom, and that's a pretty sorry way to put it. Okay, but that's how they say it. Verse 149, he says, hear my voice according unto thy loving kindness. Okay, hear my voice, showing that the word cried in the first three verses of this section is a verbal crying out to God. Hear my voice according unto thy loving kindness, O Lord. Quicken me according to thy judgments. Quicken me. Give me life. Give me life. Give me grace. Give me mercy. Breathe into me. In Daniel 10, I think it is, where a message was sent to Daniel, and then the angel showed up and Daniel fainted. In Daniel 10:19, it says that he said unto Daniel, Daniel, be strong, I tell you, my sir, be strong. And then it says, and he got strength. So again, our words, it says in Proverbs, 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. So our words, the right word spoken at the right time, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and pitchers of silver. A word spoken at the right time under the influence of the Spirit of God has eternal value. Now think back in your life. Maybe there are certain incidents in your life where a moment in this time, you remember this distinct moment. What happened at that time? Certain, you know, times in your life. And it's like at those times, at this perfect timing, the Lord can influence a life. Okay, just a simple word here and there, and also can do the opposite. Okay, a curse thrown here and there. So remember that when our words come out of our mouth, one of three spirits accompany those words, unclean, man's, the Lord's spirit, and those spirits will try to execute those words, enforce those words. Okay, and so in verse 149, hear my voice. And then he's asking the Lord to quicken him. Verse 150, they draw nigh that follow after mischief. They are far from thy law. Okay, they draw nigh that follow the mischief. That's a direct cross-reference to the Antichrist. And it's, you know, it's just the way to look at society, you know, from the Bible perspective, you just see things in a whole new light. Mike told me about a book just recently. The title of the book is Adventures in Legal in Legal Land? No. Adventures in Legal Land. I think that's one of the top five books I've read. And you just have a whole different viewpoint on looking at the bureaucrats of society, looking at bureaucrats as flies, mosquitoes, parasites. You know, it's just a whole different viewpoint, and how they will switch around a word to legalize something, but yet they're still being thieves. And it's just phenomenal when you see these things. Okay, and then I'm not done with the book yet, but boy, I can see where this thing's heading. That this guy's got quite a ways to look at it. And man, right off the bat, it started off with the right step where he says the Bible verses from the King James Bible. I thought, man, we at least are on the right ground here. Okay, and so it's just this idea they draw nigh that follow after mischief. This mischief in this context, if you run it to the two cross references I have. This is the Antichrist, and how he will get his mischief accomplished through, quote, legal means to legalize something. Okay, when it's actually theft, fraud, deception. Okay, and the rules mean nothing to these people unless it's in their favor. Okay, and you know, that's just a sad fact of life. Verse 151, he said, Thou art near, O Lord, and all thy commandments are truth. Okay, it's Isaiah, 55:6, seek ye the Lord while he may be found. Okay, 152, concerning thy testimonies, I have known of old that thou hast founded them forever. Okay, I don't have a cross reference there, but probably one comes to mind is Proverbs 8. Well, Proverbs 8 and 9, if the Bible is given vocal cords, that's what it would say to us. And it's that the words of God are from old, the days of old, and that they have established the word of the principles and commandments of God. Okay, but the Lord has founded them, and of course it says forever. Forever, O Lord, is thy word settled in heaven. Psalm 119:89. 153, he says, consider mine affliction and deliver me, for I do not forget thy law. Okay, if that's a tribulation reference, fine, but any affliction, any trouble you have, you're asking God to consider it and asking the Lord to deliver it, deliver you from it. If he doesn't deliver you from it, then we would just have to assume that he's going to show us other things. For I do not forget thy law. Verse 154, plead my cause and deliver me. Okay, now, you know, of course, you know, I've almost always been accused of talking about government and law too much. But when you go through this Bible and read through these verses, you cannot get away from it if you just look at the words. Plead my cause. Drop the U. Plead my case. And in court, you'll see courts will use those words interchangeably. Sometimes it will say cause number. Sometimes it will say case number. It depends on the preference of the court. Plead my cause. Pleadings, they're called. And so he's asking the Lord to be his advocate, to be his defense attorney. Okay, that's what he's asking the Lord to help deliver him. And then he's asking the Lord to deliver me. Quicken me according to thy word. Now, Job did this for people in his day where he would help people out. Okay, and so this person is actually asking the Lord to intercede for him and plead his cause. You see, the Bible is, you know, preachers have tried to make the Bible to be just a religious book, okay? And what that does, that scares people away from the Bible. And of course, the devil is pleased with that. when the Bible is technically a legal book. It's got history in there, but it's God who's the king of the universe, and he has recorded down in public form, in a public forum, what he wants you and I to know about certain events of the past. And these events will focus on Jesus Christ. But what we're doing is we are reading about history and prophecy and all these events. It's focusing on Jesus Christ, but also at that time, he is giving us instructions about life. Okay, if a person reads in the Old Testament where some of these guys had multiple wives, and so they run off and say, "Well, the Bible says you can have more than one wife." No, it doesn't say that. It just records that these guys had a bunch of wives. And then it shows you all the troubles that they had. Okay, and everything. So it just records what it's doing. And what God's doing in his public records is revealing his doctrines to us. So, plead my cause. 155, salvation is far from the wicked, for they seek not thy statutes. Self-explanatory, individual salvation. Okay, 156, great are thy tender mercies. O Lord, quicken me according to thy judgments. Okay, that's a repeat phrase. Quicken according to thy judgments, 149. Okay, the idea of quicken, of course, is to give life to. 157, many are my persecutors and mine enemies, yet do I not decline from thy testimonies. Okay, so this guy's got a bunch of folks causing him headaches. Okay, many are my persecutors and mine enemies. I got a couple cross-references there. You can run those if you want. 158, I beheld the transgressors and was grieved because they kept not thy word. Okay, that grieving. Similar to, I think it was last week I mentioned, where a person can sigh or cry about the sins of a people. Okay, sins of folks in the church, sins of society at large. Okay, where he's grieved by it. Okay, so he's grieved means he's got some emotional attachment. He experiences the grief that God experiences. Okay, he tries to look at it from the Lord's perspective. Now, the cross-reference I have on that one, Ezekiel 9:4, which is about sighing. It's when the Lord is getting ready to pick up the cup. Remember that with nations, God, remember, sin is like scarlet, okay? And as the sins are collected for a nation, there's a vial or a bowl that the Lord drops these sins in this vial or bowl. And in Genesis 15:6, he mentions the Amorites, their sin is not yet full. So it's like filling this jar. And when it gets to the tippy top, maybe it starts spilling over the side, and then God picks up this jar as his wrath and pours his wrath out on the nation. Now, before God does that, Ezekiel 9 verse 4 implies that angels go through and then they put certain marks on people. Ezekiel 9:4, and the Lord said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that are done in the midst thereof. So they're grieved by what's going on in society, in their community, in their nation, in their family, in their church, in the synagogue, whatever. They're grieved by the offenses that we're committing against God. And when that judgment comes in, it's like he withholds or stays some of the judgment on the people who are concerned about it. Like Lot, where he pulled Lot out, but I don't think he pulled him out because of Lot. I think he pulled him out of Sodom because of Abraham. And Abraham was the one concerned about it. Okay, so I beheld the transgressors and was grieved by it, because it kept not thy word. Okay, so if somebody's going through the channels and you happen to catch where you got two fags on there and they're openly showing this stuff on TV, I mean, that'll bother us. Or there's a cartoon that was, I forget the name of it, one family, a watchdog group, where this cartoon had, and it had a scene in there that it was so vulgar, I don't even want to mention it, in adult company. I mean, it was so pervert. It was a bestiality showed or implied to children. I mean, that's where it's heading in this country. You see, where not long from now, it's already being, you know, hinted at, where they're going to try to portray that bestiality and incense is a normal or alternative form of demonstration of love. Okay, and that's obviously the progression down. You know, they call it progress. Okay, and it's not progress at all. Obama calls himself a progressive. Hillary calls herself a progressive. That is the extreme left-wing radical side. Okay, and of course they're not going to call them left-wing radicals. They reserve that to the right-wing radicals. Okay, 159, he said, consider how I love thy precepts, quicken me, O Lord, according to thy loving kindness. Okay, his love for the precepts is demonstrated by the crying out of verse 145, 46, 47, 48, and the time that he puts into it. Thy word is true from the beginning, and every one of thy righteous judgments endureth forever. Okay, thy word, wonder if we got that. Not according to most preachers. Thy word is true from the beginning, and every one of thy righteous judgments endureth forever. Okay, now the next section has some individual verses that just, you can spend a lot of time on each one of them individually. Okay, 161, we probably won't get through the whole section, but 161, princes have persecuted me without a cause, but my heart standeth in awe of thy word. Okay, now, notice the standard reaction of Americans toward the Bible itself. We ought to look at the Bible with an awe. Okay, there's the word now is awesome. Our God is an awesome God. Okay, but we need to be in awe of the Bible. I mean, to step back and look at it and say, wow, what a book. There's no book like this book. I mean, if you look at in Ecclesiastes, it says, of making many books, there is no end. If you go to the library and look at the books, somebody one time made a statistic about all these stuff, and I can't remember the statistics, but, you know, one book out of 10 might even make, you know, 500 sales. You know, and then one book out of 1,000, one book out of 100,000, and so forth and so on. There's no book that's withstood 400 years like this book. You don't find books like that. I mean, 400 years, and the thing is, next year, 2011, is the 400th year anniversary of this blessed book, and it's still going strong in spite of all the slander against it, in spite. You know, I've read this one thing where the NIV has outsold the King James Bible in this past year. That's from their statistics. What about all the churches, because the King James Bible is not copyrighted, that don't send in their statistics to the NIV people? They can keep an accurate account of it because they've got it copyrighted. What about all the non-copyrighted King James Bibles in from multiple sources they can't keep track of? There's no way they're going to keep track of it. You see, and to be in awe of this book is just a phenomenal thing. People that tell me the Bible's got many mistakes and all that stuff, that tells me they haven't read it. Tells me they haven't studied it. Tells me they haven't spent any time in it. Because just being honest and spending time in this book, you got to step back from this book. and see how precise it is. No loopholes. If you allow every word to stay right within its context, don't add to, don't subtract from, don't distort anything, there's no book like this. There's no way that a man could write like this. I mean, whenever man puts something together, you're going to find flaws. So we are in awe of thy word. The first phrase, princes have persecuted me without a cause, the idea of without a cause pulls that into equal, or not equal, but comparison to Jesus Christ himself. Okay, in Matthew chapter 5, that phrase without a cause, and then you'll find that they persecuted Jesus Christ, you know, at Calvary, without a cause. They had no cause there. They had no case per se. The whole court proceedings was a facade or a fake. But probably most everybody knows about this verse, Matthew 5:22. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother, and then there's that phrase, without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And then the rest of the verse. Okay, now if you take the phrase without a cause from the passage, whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of the judgment. Go to Mark 3:5, you see Jesus Christ gets mad at the Jewish brothers. And what they're implying is that Jesus Christ sinned by taking that phrase out. So without a cause, no doubt, reveals to us that he had a cause in Mark 3:5 to get angry at them. Okay, and that's one of those verses that's changed in all the Bibles. They take that phrase out. Okay, princes, politicians, bureaucrats. Politicians, princes have persecuted me without a cause. Princes, lawyers, they're unproductive people that take from productive. You say, what kind? About all of them. And the one behind a bench is a lawyer with a black robe on it, and he's in cahoots with the other lawyers. And if they get people to come in who they represent, that person becomes a ward of the court. And so he can't complain what the court's going to say because he has allowed himself to become a ward of the court by asking this guy to represent him. Okay, and the whole idea is violence. It's violence from top to bottom. And didn't Jesus say that the kingdom of heaven... He said in Matthew 11 that the kingdom of heaven is operated under violence, and that's how the whole thing works. Now, if you haven't experienced the violence, you know, go in and watch it. Watch a 65-year-old guy throw a 2-year-old temper tantrum because you didn't stand up for him. It's violence. And what's he going to do if he don't like what you're doing? He's going to put you in a cage. They call them jails, but it's a cage. I tell you, if you and I treated our animals like what they treat some of these men, the Anti-Cruelty Society would be knocking on their door. You say, well, they deserve to be in a cage. How do you know they deserve to be in a cage? You know, granted, I know, you know, a guy that's a murderer don't deserve to be a cage. He deserves to be dead. You see, a guy that's a thief don't deserve to be in a cage either. He deserves to get out there and get a job and pay for what he stole. You see, and if each of our counties ran biblically, they would need a jail to house 4 people. And the court system be running faster. That's the way it should be, but of course they're not going to follow that. Okay, and so... Princes have persecuted me without a cause. The non-productive taken from the productive. But my heart standeth in awe of thy word. Okay, 162. Now notice again, this person's desire, when they learn something from the Bible, when they are enlightened about something from the Bible, notice his attitude. I rejoice at thy word as one that findeth great spoil. Okay, great spoil. A bounty, a booty, you know, or yeah. Find something you've lost. You dug a hole in your backyard and you found a bucket that you know somebody had buried, and you open it up and you got some cash in there. Okay, and any of us that would find that would be pretty excited about it. Okay, you'd probably tell somebody about it, probably run around. Several years ago, I was teaching a little guy's, you know, I don't know if it was Master's Club or back in Awana Day, and I was teaching him a lesson. I taped four quarters under four chairs. And so I was teaching away, and I showed him this verse, and I said, now, you know, fellas, you know, there's four quarters under four chairs in this room. And I tell you, they were not diplomatic. They were not cultural. I mean, it was like hit the ground, ripped it, and four very excited kids. That's when a quarter kind of meant something, you know. But, I mean, they were hooting and hollering about that. Now, that's our attitude we should have toward the Bible. Not that you hoot and holler about things, but you get all excited about it. When I discovered this Bible-believing preaching, you know, going through Hiles Anderson, you know, the typical fundamentalist stuff, going out to Colorado, trying to deal with people in the street and get these charismatics to ask you questions about Hebrews 3, 6, 10, Acts 2, and not even know where to go with it. And then you try to get out of the embarrassing situation, and on your way home, the Spirit of God saying, they got you. You can't answer it, can you? No, I can't. And so then I hear about, you know, Ruckman, and I start listening to some of his tapes, and I say, whoa, man, this guy's radical. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this guy's out there. And then I realize he was right. I used to get his paper. The biggest thing I thought was so funny about his new paper that he used to have, I don't know if somebody of you remember where he used to have it print on newspaper paper. And it would, one of the front covers was the mother whores at it again. That thing was in my mailbox all crinkled up. And he used to put letters from people, and I mean, half of those letters was, your paper ain't worth to line my bird cage with. I mean, he'd put them all in there. I mean, most of the time when you get letters from, you know, people, it's always positive stuff. And I'd sit there and laugh at those letters. I mean, he'd put them all, he don't do that anymore, but he used to. And so when I started going through his, I realized that, man, I don't know this Bible, I got to do it all again. And during the winter months down there at Rensselaer, I'd get in that one little office and I'd hit the cassette recorder. And the recorder I had would put it on a fast mode so you can hear him talking real fast. And because Isaiah has 72 cassette tapes. Man, oh man. And I could pick it up and I'd have a commentary in front of me. And I'd be in there by myself 6 to 8 hours through the winter months. And I'd get so excited. I'd hoot and holler, and I'd say, why did I see that before? It's so easy, it's so easy. And I'd be so excited about that stuff because not only could I see what the Bible said, I could now defend what the Bible said. And, oh, man, was that exciting. And at that time, fortunately, at that time, there was a guy in Ohio that had permission from Ruckman where he sold all the cassettes for a buck a tape. And I bought everything he had, verse by verse, and went from Genesis, Revelation, not in that order, but everything that he had, verse by verse, and marked up that Bible. And man, that was so exciting to me because that book came alive. And that's the way it should be. Okay, so I rejoice at thy word as one that findeth great spoil. Okay, we'll stop at that one and come back. Any questions or comments when we covered? Brother Mike?